Dennis, as a new study suggests, more than half of counselors involved in substance abuse disorder treatment programs were actually victims of violence at the hands of their patients. And this is raising concerns about the safety of those counselors. And we're going to dig a little deeper on this issue. We're joined by the study's author, Dr. Brian Bride from Georgia State University, and substance abuse counselor, Dr. Angela Patheil-Wash. Thank you both for taking the time to come in. We appreciate this.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Let me just begin with both of you. Dennis and I were talking earlier. Mm-hmm. I guess a lot of times this is something that we don't think about, the safety of the counselors who are working with these patients. Is this something that's, I guess, maybe known because you're all involved in that community that's been going on for a long time?
I would say it happens. In my experience working with, I've experience working in inpatient and outpatient substance abuse treatment programs, and it was very infrequent, however. It did happen, though. It is an occurrence.
Dr. Bright?
You know, I have experience as a clinician myself, and as a clinician, I didn't experience it, but became interested after talking to a number of other colleagues over the years to do the research. The study that we did, as you mentioned, shows that over half counselors experience during their career some sort of violence.
And we're talking about predominantly physical violence here, or just verbal assault, from a patient to a counselor?
Well, we looked at three types. So one is physical assault, the second being a threat of physical assault, and the third being verbal assault. And overwhelmingly, the majority of the assaults were verbal assault. Really, only 3% experienced physical assault, but 1 in 5 experienced a threat of physical assault, which can sometimes be this disruptive.
Dr. Bright, I'll start with you on this one. Do most clinics even take that possibility into account when they set up their offices, for instance, or set up their staff? I imagine with inpatient facilities, perhaps it's given a little more thought. But in an outpatient setting, let's say in an office park or something like that, is that something that's even considered beforehand?
Yes. I think overall, most treatment centers have policies around how patients interact with the staff and with each other. And I think you're absolutely correct. In residential or inpatient settings, those rules and those policies tend to be more upfront. But I think that's one of the good things about the field is they do anticipate that this is a possibility. And typically have rules in which a patient would be kicked out or asked to leave the treatment program.
Dr. Patheil-Wash, sometimes when a patient is in the middle of an episode, though, being asked to leave is not exactly an automatic fix for the problem. Mm-hmm. So one of the difficult questions then becomes, how do you manage this? I mean, do you use restraints on a person? Do you call the authorities? Are there drugs for this? I mean, it obviously depends on the individual and the episode, but are there really any sorts of policies or protocols around this?
There are policies and protocols. I think what's most important is to manage the event therapeutically. So to have a conversation with the person, there's ways that we can relate to people when they're in the midst of an episode to help them de-escalate their behavior. Just having a seat with them, maybe reflecting, what they're feeling. What happens with some of these patients is they don't feel very good. So they're coming into an inpatient treatment program, their symptoms are not stable, and obviously they're not coping very well. And so maybe there's a way that we can relate to them to have a conversation about that to really de-escalate. Now, if they, get to the point where
If they're really agitated or violent or threatening, that's not going to be very effective.
So then what's most important is that we have a cross-disciplinary approach around managing the event so that we have some communication with psychiatry. And yes, maybe at some point medication is indicated. We engage other people who the patient might be connected with. There might be some, people on the floor or some other sort of paraprofessionals that they feel connected with to engage them in that event and so to help them de-escalate. So there are protocols that are usually followed to ensure their safety as well as other patient safety and staff safety as well.
Dr. Bright, let me throw this at you because I'm curious, in your study, did you find that there was maybe one form of a particular substance abuse based on a patient that was maybe more manageable than another, or one where you found, hey, these people who were being treated for this tend to have more violent outbursts or threats of violence?
In my study, we didn't find that, partly because of the perspective we took. We conducted surveys with the clinicians and not with the counselors, so we didn't look at every incident. Although we anticipated, based on prior research, that some drugs such as the stimulants, cocaine, methamphetamine, might be more likely to lead to violent behavior.
Dr. Bethea-Wash, if you don't mind sharing, you're a substance counselor, so can you recall an incident where you felt physically threatened or there was a threat of, or you experienced that?
I actually did. It happened 2 weeks before I left my first job here in Georgia. As a matter of fact, I was working at an inpatient psychiatric unit at a state hospital, and I was struck in the back by a patient. And this is a patient who we knew had a history of violence. We know that this patient had a history of violence, and that we had a relationship together. And so she also knew that I was leaving, and there might have been something happening there that sort of translated into violence. And so we handled it therapeutically. At the time, I was removed from the unit to ensure my safety, but later on, you know, engaged her in a conversation about it and looked at, you know, what, if anything, we could have done to prevent that in the future.
Can you share, when you say you handled it therapeutically, can you sort of share what that was like?
Mm-hmm. So in essence, to have a conversation with the treatment team. So to invite the patient in, we talked to the patient about, you know, her behavior and maybe, you know, what was happening for her at the time. And so, you know, to just have a conversation about it in a way to humanize it. I think in many of these instances, people are trying to communicate something. It doesn't always come across the right way, but, you know, really to sort of get to that. And so, of course, to walk them through the consequences of violent behavior and things of that nature, to maybe look at what might have been some other factors. Maybe this patient, and I remember faintly, but maybe this patient, you know, didn't have a lot of coverage with other staff, or, you know, was unattended to. And so there were some other factors that we needed to take a look at, and as opposed to criminalizing the behavior or pathologizing it, really.
And Dr. Bethea-Walsh, let me start with you on this one, too, because this, again, may be something that happens more with outpatient facilities than inpatient ones. But have you in your practice, or have other clinicians and therapists been worried about somebody bringing a weapon in? And are there, you know, particularly if somebody is abusing a drug that might produce some sort of paranoia or something, is that something that's talked about a lot?
I think we're giving more attention to it, especially in the outpatient setting where we do have protocols in place. I do some part-time work in some other settings, and so we have locked doors, we have security procedures in place. And so I've also worked in VA hospitals before. I did my pre-doctoral internship at a VA hospital in East Orange, New Jersey, and we had actually white buttons under our desks. But by no means did I ever feel threatened by a patient. I really didn't.
Dr. Beard, are counselors, excuse me, Dr. Bride, are counselors being heard more by the folks who, say, run the operations? In other words, are the folks on the front line getting more attention when they talk about this problem?
Yes, indeed. Our study specifically asked counselors how the organization responded when there was an incident. Mm-hmm. And overwhelmingly, 70-80% of organizations increased training in regards to how counselors can de-escalate the situation and handle violence as it occurs. And over half also instituted more structural issues around safety.
We're talking about the issue of patient violence against substance abuse counselors with Dr. Brian Bride from Georgia State and substance abuse counselor Dr. Angela Bethea-Wash. I want to get back to you, Dr. Bride, for a second. With this study, first of all, how many people did you all, I guess, sort of survey or speak with? And then what do you do with this information, and who gets to see it?
Sure. The study sample was over 1,400 counselors.
And we're talking about adults here, not any particular age group in terms of the patients, or are we just talking about mostly adults?
No, the patients ranged the gamut. So this was a national study. We sampled counselors in treatment centers all across the nation. They were both inpatient, residential, and outpatient. And some worked with adolescents, some worked with adults and adolescents, some mixed different mixes in terms of genders and substances used.
So with this information, what do you do with it?
Well, there's a couple things. One is to just get the word out there and inform the field regarding this issue. You know, to some respect, this study is positive in that rates were not as high as they might have been. And also, the next step is to really do some further research to get finer detail around what is going on and how the sorts of interventions we've talked about here might really impact the future experiences.
Well, in terms of future experiences, and I'll come to Dr. Bethea Walsh, because I'm curious in terms of in training and education and preparing for this field here, how much is given in terms of preparing substance abuse counselors for incidents like this?
That is critical. In general, I would say that systems are doing better with system-wide training around these issues. And so and I'm a psychologist by trade, so at the state hospital where I worked, we played a critical role in training staff around what might be some early warning signs to violence. If we knew that a patient was returning to the unit that we've worked with before, then, you know, what are some things that we might look for? How might we have some opportunities to intervene around that so we can prevent violence from happening on the unit?
And Dr. Bethea Walsh, one of the elements that we haven't talked about a whole lot, because not all patients would have this as part of their lives, are families.
Mm-hmm.
Is it critical as part of trying either to prevent or minimize future incidents to involve family members, if at all possible?
Yes, absolutely. So one of the things we know about violence risk and risk prevention is to engage as many available supports as possible, whether that's, you know, biological family, extended family, people who feel very connected to the patient, and vice versa. So that's very critical. So when I was speaking about the cross-disciplinary approach before, engaging social work, for example, around that could be very helpful and effective.
And Dr. Bride, I don't know if the study looked at that, but I mean, was that something that seems to be effective in a lot of cases, at least where family members can be involved and where they have that contact and connection with the patient?
Certainly, that can be very helpful. And there's also an indirect way that can be helpful. And one is the family is a good motivator for keeping people in treatment. So people stay in treatment often because of their family's expectations and their family's desire to get better. And if the rules are that if you engage in this kind of behavior, you're going to have to leave treatment, that's another motivation for them too.
And Dr. Bryan, as we wrap up here, is there enough information, data here that you all have collected that you maybe not need to go back a few years from now and say, well, let's go back and let's see what now the same substance abuse counselors are saying? Have things changed? Have policies been in place to sort of curb these attacks? Will you all look at that?
Absolutely. I mean, that's one of our goals, is to do a longitudinal study. And that's one of the limitations of this. You know, the rates may look low because mm-hmm. people who experienced physical assault may have mm-hmm. already left the field. So that's something we need to capture in future studies.
We've been talking about the issue of patient violence against substance abuse counselors with Dr. Brian Bride from Georgia State University and substance abuse counselor Dr. Angela Bethea Walsh. Thank you both for coming in and taking the time. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And tell us what you think.